This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 40 of What's It Like. My guest is director, filmmaker, and photographer Jay Silverman. Hey, Jay.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm okay. You're in Hollywood, but you didn't grow up there, did you?
I grew up in Los Angeles.
Well, that's close enough.
Believe it or not, I'm a native. There's not very many of us around.
Did you come from a large family?
Not that large, five of us.
Oh, well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Who was the largest influence on your life?
You know, I suppose, as crazy as it sounds, is my high school photography teacher.
Mm.
His name was Warren King, and he was a firm believer in injecting. In those days, there was no internet, no communications of that nature. So he would bring in professionals from Life magazine, Look magazine, and these were legendary film and photographers. And I got the very remarkable opportunity to meet these people in their flesh and blood, and I think that gave me a real mentor type of beginning.
Mm-hmm. What was your major challenge as a child?
I wasn't that great in school. I don't think I was a very academically inclined individual, and hence my reason for being attracted to the liberal arts. But it's kind of interesting because someone just asked me recently to sum up some of my experiences when I was younger, and I think one of the biggest moments when I was, 13 years old was my brother shooting pictures and me going, I think I can do that too. And when I did it, all of a sudden I started getting strokes. And then I started to realize, oh my goodness, if I want to get strokes, I can just shoot pictures. And I think in some crazy way, my self-esteem grew in that capacity because of that. And then, I ended up taking photography courses in high school, and I don't think I ever stopped since then,
Do you remember what your first camera was?
I have no idea. But if you ask me if I had one from 30 years ago, I still do. I have a Nikon and a Hasselblad, and they're only worth about $50 on the internet, so I figure I might as well just keep them.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Insane. Insane.
Now, you started off, obviously, with what would be called wet photography, actually processing film and hanging it in the darkroom and all that kind of stuff. But have you shifted to the digital?
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, we're totally digital for the last, 10 years. Maybe the last 8 years, we totally went digital. And in my film business as well, I shoot a camera called the Red.
Oh, wow.
Which is a 4K camera, and both that medium and my still medium are all digital. So I have one less employee that doesn't run his car back and forth to the lab 30 times a day. And I don't contaminate the environment.
Yeah.
So on both levels, it's kind of cool.
So the 4K gives you kind of double HD, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's double HD. But basically, the true advantage of it is, at least this, at this stage in my career, is it looks like film. We shoot 24p, which is 24 frames per second, and subsequently have an incredible advantage of being able to utilize the state-of-the-art equipment, but at the same time, some of the things that can be enjoyed from that format today is I can actually blow it up. So I can get a medium and a wide shot out of a wide shot.
Mm-hmm.
That actually becomes quite advantageous, especially if you're photographing or filming an actor.
Right.
Comedian in particular is not going to replicate the shot multiple times at different focal lengths.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a perfect cut.
Thank you.
Let me thank you for your generosity. This has been such a fun project, and at every step along the way, people have been helpful and really big-hearted. They've rated our show on iTunes, they've told their friends about it, and they've donated money. If you would like to donate to the cause, click on the donate button at whatsitlike.info. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
So did you always want to become a photographer?
I think when I was very, I actually have three children that are the same age as when I was making those decisions, and they're totally lost. I'm thinking to myself how fortunate I was that I was focused and fulfilled, because I didn't dabble in drugs and I didn't dabble in dangerous stunts, like Jackass. I was lucky enough to see an incredible amount of fulfillment doing what I loved, which is shoot pictures, and subsequently it grew into making movies and grew into making TV commercials and so forth. But conceptually, it's neat to be able to say that I knew when I was a teenager that this is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did one of the things that I always wanted to do. You went to Brooks Institute.
Oh, yeah, no, Brooks was great. As I reflect and I speak at graduations there now and then, I'm one of their honor students, so to speak. I reflect on that, and I, always come in with a fresh perspective of what I learned at Brooks. And I think the biggest thing I learned at Brooks, which is probably the most valuable tool any businessman can have, is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wouldn't say Brooks has some remarkable advantage over any other school, except for if you choose to engage in the curriculum and actually become, a part of the process, doing things on time, on budget, and all that other stuff, you can actually be really well-groomed to actually, become a professional.
Did you start out doing headshots and typical studio work?
No, what I started out doing, I actually, because I was I had a couple mentors, I was trying to, engage in doing what I learned from them, which was problem solving. That was a huge advantage that I learned young. The teachers at school would say, you need to go photograph, a white object on a white background, and it's got to be done with this kind of film. If you don't engage in following the prescription, you can't get detail in either one. Well, those are the beginnings of learning the discipline of light. And, I was very fortunate at an early age to start seeing how light fell on objects and doing assignments with textures and things. And then, of course, as I got older, I realized what I was really actually good at was shooting people, and getting them to do things that typically photographers can't do.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing. I just reviewed a project from Hawaii that somebody sent me, and it's a bunch of children at a camp that are all problem children. And they said, "What do you think of these pictures?" And I said, "Well, I can tell some of these are forced smiles, And it was at that moment that I realized that really what I was seeing was what makes me do what I do well, because typically, you wake up one morning, you ask what goes on a given day. I might be shooting a job tomorrow for Pepsi, and I have four kids that have been casted, and they all seem to fit the bill visually, but it's my job to make them look like, they're experiencing something that is just so incredibly momentous that you got to have a drink yourself. Because I shoot advertising, that would be my objective, my assignment would be to make these four guys look like they're having the time of their life. And, to get that out of an actor, sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not as easy. Well, it's even more difficult when you're working with celebrities, because typically they don't even want to be there.
Just one of the things they have to do, huh?
It's one of the things they choose to do to make a living.
Right. So how do you get it out of them?
Part of my process is trying to understand who they are first before I even meet them. Second, do a little research on, what kind of historical problems they are to work with. And probably third, break the barrier and make them feel comfortable. I once did a job with Dennis Miller. He had, the absolute worst reputation working with commercial companies because he just had no tolerance for their bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the day that I was working with him was on a Cadillac commercial, and I introduced myself and I said to him right out the gate, I broke the ice and said, "I just want to let you know I've heard everything about you, and you're a horrible, horrible, difficult person to work with. So it's a pleasure to work with you." And he cracked up, and that was breaking the ice. Without passing judgment on him, because you don't know what he dealt with on those other experiences. But typically, working with actors and celebrities, most of these people are pretty decent people. So you just need to figure out what it's going to take to make them feel respected.
Mm-hmm. What's the best thing about your job?
I think solving problems. About 10 years ago, I was trying to ascertain how I could get more business, rather than sit around here waiting for the phone to ring. Said to me, "Look, you got to sit down, you got to figure out who you are and what you are, and that's the message you got to tell people. So he says, so who are you? And I said to him, well, I'm this photographer that shoots great pictures of people. He goes, that's not, there's a lot of people that can do that. What makes you different? For 4 days, I went over and over and over this with my head. I tried everything. I called him and go, I know how to light cars. I know how to make people look young that are actually old. I know how to get, you know, children to smile when they don't want to smile. He says, but none of that is what you do. I finally just said, well, I think what I do is I just solve problems. And he goes, bingo. You're a problem solver. And that was a monumental moment in my ability to take a flat, kind of zero perspective look at my career and go, ah, I get it. You know, I do what other people can't. You know, I solve problems. Hence the reason why people hire people like me to do the jobs, because they know that, sure, they can get it cheaper down the street, or they know that they can get, there's always someone that'll do it cheaper, and there's always someone that'll do it quicker. The question is, you know, if you're getting ready to spend $2 million on media, mm-hmm. and print a poster, why would you save $10,000, $5,000 to get it produced if it's going to jeopardize $2 million worth of media buying? And that was kind of a revelation to me, you know, because that really is what I do.
What's the worst thing about your job?
I think that's a good question. I would say the fact that it's not the worst thing, but it's fulfilling after a fact, is reinventing yourself. I've been doing it for 32 years, so for me, that's challenging. Mm-hmm. I would be lying if I didn't tell you that. And, you know, you constantly got to be cognizant of what's going on in your world and make sure you update and make sure that you're communicating at a level that makes people go, wow, this guy's, you know, knows what he's doing, versus, you know, the guy that wakes up in the morning and thinks that the story he told 2 years ago is going to work today.
What type of person would be good at your job?
I think a extrovert. I think a person that has passion. I think it's a person that has just an inordinate amount of patience and, you know, resilience. Mm-hmm. Resilience is a big part of it, because it is probably what's the most required in trying to, you know, how do you stay in business for 32 years? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that in itself requires a little thought, you know. Was it the fact that I was resilient, or was it the fact that I was willing to change? It's both. It's really both.
So if I needed a headshot, would I come to you?
No.
Or do you do? No.
No. It's,
who's your typical client?
Advertising agencies and television networks. Any kind of businesses. One day it could be Coca-Cola. The next day it could be Intel. The next day it could be Apple Computer. It's big companies that, you know, do advertising, that spend money on developing products that need to be photographed, you know, or commercials. I mean, we're shooting a commercial for a company called Rent-A-Center in a couple of weeks, and we'll be bringing in celebrities and shooting products, and, you know, that's very exciting, very fulfilling.
Is there such a thing as a typical day?
No. I mean, it's an interesting question you bring up. I've often thought about when I lecture, I tell people, you know, don't wait for the phone to ring. Well, you know, it's pretty hard not to when you're a human being. But the truth of it is, you constantly got to be redeveloping and redeveloping and thinking, you know, how can I turn this square into a circle? How can I turn that circle into an oval? And, you know, part of that challenge requires forward thinking, and part of that challenge requires, you know, a team of people that, you know, want to fight for the same vision.
Mm-hmm.
This is applicable whether you're a scientist or you're a photographer or you're a filmmaker. But one of the things that's most empowering is if you can watch yourself from a distance and then notate it. I have a good friend that just left a job in Chicago that was, you know, a very high-paying job. In the middle of a recession, he left his job and moved out to the West Coast. And I said to him, you know, you got 3 more days there. I said, try something that might actually make your day. I go, write down today what it was like working there. Write down today what were the good things and what were the bad things, and put it out in writing, because there will be a moment, unequivocally, guaranteed, where you're going to wonder what you did wrong. You understand? Because you're a human being.
Right.
And then that document will provide you with a source of perspective that even though you had it in you, you won't be able to find.
Jay will tell you what to do with your life right after I remind you of the good work being done by the ALS Association. When it was found in 1985, I'd never really heard of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. I'd heard of Lou Gehrig, the baseball player, and that he had some kind of disease, but he was way before my time. And I knew the actor David Niven had the disease. But when my mom was diagnosed with ALS in 1987 and died from it the following year, then I paid attention. This is a terrible disease. It's not contagious, but it is progressive. It's a neuromuscular disorder that gradually kills you. Your brain is connected to your muscles by motor neurons. In ALS, the muscles work fine, or at least they would if they received signals from the brain. But the motor neurons that carry the instructions die off. No signals, no movement. No movement, no strength, and finally, no breathing. So it's important to figure out how these motor neurons work, and how to keep them alive. If you want to become a researcher, here's an interesting area to pursue. And if research isn't your thing, but you want to help, go to ALSA.org and donate to the ALS Association. Your help would be greatly appreciated. So, Jay, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
I think that's an interesting question. I'm not entirely cognizant of the specific effort I make, except for, I am past the point of doing it for the money. I'm at the point where now I really genuinely believe what I try to teach my children, and that is do what you love and, everything else will come. And that theory that I was given from my uncle was the same theory I give myself now. And that is, if I really dig something and I really want this to come to fruition, it typically will, as long as I don't make it about the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm in the process of selling two TV shows right now, and both of them come from the heart. Neither of them are coming from a position of economic motivation. And it's exciting, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get that fulfillment knowing that I'm trying something that most people think is not possible.
When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
Read, relax, breathe, listen to music. I walk a lot, that type of thing. I'm a firm believer in talk therapy.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
I'm going through that right now.
Hmm.
I have a child that is turning 15 yesterday that I had to send away to a place to help her gather her directives and her priorities because she was going down the wrong road. And that particular experience has been the most trying thing I've ever had to do in my life.
Hmm.
And that's because, it's painful to let your own flesh and blood down a road that is going to be, painful.
Yeah.
The good news is now 2 weeks into this journey, she's actually evolving in a positive way. And
mm-hmm.
It makes me feel great, but it's an interesting question you ask because, I'm actually going through it right now. I've never in my, entire life felt as concerned and as incredibly pressured by such an important decision. I'm sure mm-hmm. with your mother passing from, a horrible disease, you wish you could do something and you don't have the
right
tools, I don't have the tools to help my daughter with what she's dealing with, and we found somebody that did. And what's great about it is that, I hopefully did it before it was too late.
Mm-hmm. It's always hard when you don't have control over things.
That's right. Especially you keep your control free.
Is there a principle or an idea that has helped you through your challenges?
I think, my principle is to do what you love with integrity and everything else will come. I really genuinely believe that. So,
if you were giving a commencement address for high school or college graduation, what would you say? What would be your best advice?
I think follow your dream. It's interesting. I often tell this story. We produce a substantial amount of projects a year. And you wonder, how many people are unemployed, and you wonder how many people out there, are looking for work. But astonishingly, we get a call here and there from people going, do you have anything going on? And I just wonder, you know, are people just sitting by their phones waiting? Or, you know, why don't people do what I do, which is I actually go out of my way to try to get noticed. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that people in general are passive, and you've got to overcome that if you want to succeed. And to me, that's a huge thing. So if I'm talking to a group of students and I'm going, you know, all 600 of you are getting ready to go out in the field and compete against one another, what's going to separate you from the guy next to you? And says, you know, the vast majority in the business I'm in, of the work you do, you know, can be done by a lot of different people. It's not as if, you know, you're creating such a magnificent piece of work that they couldn't get it from anybody else. What it is the process. It's, you know, it's the, do you like working with this person? Was the experience positive? Was it something that, you know, you can reflect on and go, I want to do it again? And I mean, you know, there's an old story in business that I'm in right now, and that is where you sit back and you actually take a deep look at, you know, what succeeds and what doesn't succeed. More frequently than not, you know, people give up. And, you know, and you can understand why there's so few that actually succeed. I'm talking about in the arts that I'm in. Because there's just this inherent inability to be able to follow through. And it's interesting, you know, it's like I took a walk yesterday across the street from my studio, and there was a Thai restaurant there, and now they're turning it into a different kind of a restaurant. And I said, oh, I feel so bad. Yeah, I love that Thai restaurant. And the guy says, well, it's the same owner. They're just trying something new. So it was refreshing because they didn't go out of business. What they did was they're changing their mode, which essentially is reinventing themselves. And kind of think that's the only way to survive.
I want to thank Jay Silverman for joining me today. Thanks, Jay. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, and I wish all of you well, and thanks for taking the time to tap into a little bit about me.